And the meeting of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs will come to order. And it is now 1:07 p.m. on March 12, 2013. We're in room 120. Members currently present, we have Representative Higgins, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Hughes, myself, Representative Co-Chair Representative Foster, my Co-Chair Representative Ledoux, and Representative Reinbold, and also Representative Sadler. We do have a full house and a quorum. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum, and to conduct business, please turn off smartphones and cell phones because they will interfere with the sound system here. And today we'll be hearing two bills. The first one is HCR 4, which is the Hmong American Veterans Day, and then the second one will be HB 59, which is the Missing and Vulnerable Adult Response Plan. So with that, here to speak about House Concurrent Resolution 4 is my co-chair, Representative Ledoux's Chief of Staff, Dirk Moffitt. If you would come up and introduce yourself for the record, and please proceed. Thank you, Dirk.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Dirk Moffitt, staff of Representative Gabrielle Ledoux. House Concurrent Resolution 4 would proclaim May 15th Hmong American Veterans Memorial Day. From 1960 to 1973, the Hmong fought and fought hard. They rescued downed American pilots and identified targets for bombing missions, otherwise made themselves a nuisance to the communist forces in the area. They suffered heavy casualties. On May 15th, 1997, the U.S. government declassified its role in the secret war in Laos against the NVA and Viet Cong Communist Forces. Hence, May 15th was chosen as Hmong American Veterans Memorial Day. These fighters are not recognized as veterans of the U.S. military, nor entitled to benefits of having served at that time. Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced legislation that would allow 6,900 former Hmong soldiers living in the United States the right to be buried in national cemeteries. So who are the Hmong people, and why is this resolution important? The Hmong are indigenous people of Southeast Asia who traditionally occupy the strategic highlands of Laos that overlook North Vietnam. They were recruited by the CIA to fight a guerrilla war against communist forces in Laos and North Vietnam. It was called the Secret War. Beginning in 1960, the United States Central Intelligence Agency recruited thousands of Hmong to fight the communist Pao Thao, Lao, and North Vietnamese Army regulars in Laos. In July of 1961, Brigadier General Edward G. Lansdale wrote a memo to General Maxwell D. Taylor that about 9,000 Hmong tribesmen have been equipped for guerrilla operations, which they are now conducting with considerable effectiveness in the communist-dominated territory in Laos. As many as 100,000 Hmong were recruited and trained in special units to engage in the North Vietnamese Army. The United States relied heavily on special guerrillas units to interdict the flow of communist reinforcements, the war supply of the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and the Hmong, although outnumbered, fought against enemy forces, disrupted the flow of troops and war supplies along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. The Hmong conducted tactical guerrilla actions, flew thousands of deadly combat missions in support of United States Armed Forces and Central Intelligence Agency, and fought conventional and guerrilla combat with extreme casualties. The Hmong protected United States personnel, guarded United States radar installations, gathered critical intelligence about the enemy operations, and undertook rescue missions to save the lives of downed U.S. United States pilots. About 40,000 Hmong lost their lives defending democracy. Approximately 50,000 Hmong were seriously injured and disabled, and 3,000 Hmong were missing in action. Hmong soldiers died at 10 times the American soldiers in Vietnam. Because of the war effort of the United States in Laos was covert. Accounts of the sacrifices of the Hmong veterans remain largely untold. The Hmong became refugees because the United States government encouraged them to fight for the United States. And as a result, thousands of the family members of Hmong soldiers were evacuated to the United States Air Base in Thailand to avoid bloody vengeance by the communist Lao in Vietnam. After the conclusion of the war, thousands of Hmong soldiers suffered acts of retribution and atrocities by the Lao government and the North Vietnamese, causing hundreds of thousands of Hmong refugees to flee to neighboring Thailand. Approximately 50,000 Hmong veterans reside in the United States, and 150,000 Hmong children have graduated from schools in this country. Little is known or taught in the United States about the Hmong history and the contributions to the United States by Hmong people. And future generations of Hmong Americans may not learn full history of Hmong people's honorable service to the United States unless the Hmong are formally commemorated. State and local governments have issued proclamations as May 15 as Hmong Veterans Day. The passage of HCR 4 will promote, publicize, and increase awareness of the important role of Hmong have played the United States history and to afford an opportunity for the people to recognize the service and sacrifice of Hmong with appropriate ceremonies and activities. I respectfully request that concurrent resolution 4, May 15th, Hmong Veterans Memorial Day, be passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moffitt. And before we take any public testimony, are there any questions of committee members? Representative Reinbold?
Okay, well, I'll start. I have several questions, but the first one I'll start with, how many Alaska veterans, you know, the Hmong veterans live in the state right now?
That's a really good question, and we do have some people online that might be able to answer that question. I don't know the exact number of veterans we have here.
Did you want to ask your other questions, and then we can go to the...
Well, yeah, I'm not sure if right now is the appropriate time to ask those other questions.
Okay.
That one to me is very important.
Okay. And maybe to that point, you said there's somebody on the line, Mr. Moffitt?
Yes, there's some witnesses on the line that might better be able to, that actually are involved in the veterans organizations surrounding that. It'd probably be better to direct that question.
Maybe if we can go to the line then. And is there anybody out there online who might be able to answer that question?
Stephen Yang, he is the brigade represent the Hmong SGU chapter in Alaska, so he will answer that question.
Okay, and for the record again, can you repeat that name?
Yes, my name is Stephen Yang. So I am the chapter of Alaska for represent the SGU Hmong veterans, but the number that we... I'm not sure that how many number were in Alaska, but mostly we have the parents in the household parents in Alaska were mostly they are serving during the soldier and during the Vietnam War. But we're not sure the number exactly.
And I want to add to that. My name is Arthur Yang. The Hmong population in Alaska approximately 5,000. And every of the head household, they were the veterans back in the war. And so we do not have the exactly statistic number, the how many, but the population Hmong in Alaska, approximately 5,000.
Okay, and so it sounds like they're not sure. Representative Reinbold, do you have a follow-up on that?
Well, yeah, because if there's 4,700 of them right now. I mean, I have no idea what the number of actual veterans is.
Yeah, I could look into that, but I, through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I'll look into that. I don't have the number. I apologize.
And
thank you very much. Thank you very much for the Matt and Chief of Staff for responsibility. And I'm Mr. Greenbow Raiders today. My name is Professor Lee. And I represent for the Lao Hmong American Veteran of America in Anchorage, Alaska. So I come over here to support House Military and Veteran Affairs Special Committee. So I support for HCR4 for the Hmong American Veteran today. But now, I would like to let you guys know that since 1961 and to 1975, President F. Kennedy, they come over to look for the people. Like an example from the American people living in South Vietnam, 580,000 people in South Vietnam. but they got a funding, they got a die about 58,271 people. But the other Hmong people, we have 300,000 soldier fighting for with the North Vietnamese. We died 36,000 plus missing and altogether 46,000. So today I hope and your guy have to look out for the HR 371 and HR 406 for the HR 1048 because they have three and a house of residency. Now the first one they tell about for the 58,000 and about that. But the 406, they talk about for we work with America CIA during the Vietnam War. So the 1048, we talk about for an American and Hmong people we have to be legal in this country. Because right now I am represent for that we have a 38 HR path in Washington D.C. But American people they forget for us. Like and I said the Ma Began she said because right now we have a lot of thousand people in there but they die and they older and die wherever but right now they have 6,900 people and American senior people for Hmong people living in America. So I hope you guys to look at the bill and that but today I come over to support for your guy. Please the bill HCR and for the Hmong American veteran to pass.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. And I believe Representative Reinbold had a few more questions, and then Representative Sadler, and then Representative Hughes.
Well, basically what, you know, we just passed after 40 years on March 29th recognizing Vietnam veterans, and to me it just seems like that would be the day to have a special Hmong recognition on that day, which would be worthy. There would already be a lot of people there. And they would probably get more impact. So I guess I'm wondering what your feeling of special recognition on March 29th.
Through the chair, Representative Laura Reinbold, the reason that this date was picked was this was the date that the U.S. government finally recognized their sacrifices that they made. And so what the Hmong people, what the reason why the 15th is because that's the date that we recognized them. Before that, it was a secret. People knew about it, but it was a secret, and the government didn't recognize it. So that's why this specific date was picked for Hmong Veterans Day.
Right, and through the chair, I think it's great that day. But what my concern is that our World War II for every single nation. Are we going to do one for them? Are we going to do this could just grow and grow and grow and have lots and lots. And
through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I would have no problem with as many Veteran Days as we could have one for every day of the year. I'd be happy.
And see through the chair for me, it's an impact. Not diluting, you know, having a really major, you know, celebration and impact and a real special, you know, solid recognition to me, like Veterans Day, to me is a worthy, you know, worthy thing to do. But, you know, are we gonna go back through all the world wars and, you know, World War One, World War Two, the Vietnam, you know, and recognize all the people who've made sacrifices and have a special, you know, day for them? I mean, that's what my concern would be with this.
Thank you. And do you have a response, or if not, Representative Sadler?
Thank you. Through the chair, Dirk, what's the current relationship between the Hmong indigenous people still in Laos and the Laotian government? I know that time has passed and there's been some strange rejiggering of bedfellows in Southeast Asia, but is there currently the same animosity between the government and the people, or has that changed, or what's the status?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I recently watched a documentary, and they've been continually hunting down even third generation Hmongs. There was a journalist who went to find these Hmongs that are still in hiding, and he brought with them cheese and ham, and he shared this cheese and ham with these Hmong gorillas, and they had been living off of roots. And it was just a horrible food that they ate, and it wasn't even palatable to this journalist. And he said that they actually started crying because they'd never eaten anything as delicious as, you know, carved up pieces of ham and cheese. So yeah, they're still being hunted, as far as I know. I think there has been some reaching out to try to get them to come out of the wilderness, but they still had their old M16s from the Vietnam War, and we're talking, this is within the last few years, not the 70s or anything. This is 2013 that they're still out there.
I don't know if they put lima beans in with the ham chunks, but a follow-up, if I may?
Follow-up, President Sadler.
Is there any possibility that, I know that the Vietnamese government and the United States have reconciled to a surprising degree for someone who grew up in that era, would it be possible that this, having more such Veterans Days honoring the Hmong's contribution to the Vietnam War in America, various states, would their message get back to the Vietnamese and to their allies in the area? Would that help possibly ameliorate the condition of the Hmong people in Southeast Asia to have more such recognition days?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think the purpose of a, you know, a resolution that establishes a day of recognition for a group that sacrificed so much for the United States and was abandoned by us, I think it really is really slight. I don't think it's a big, I don't think it would have that kind of effect. I think it would be just recognition. I think that what the Hmong veterans want is to be recognized for the contribution that they gave and the effort they gave and weren't recognized for. Their general, and Representative Gabriel Adu was telling me this story earlier, I can't remember his name, but he died a few years back and wasn't allowed to be buried in Arlington National Cemetery. And this was the general of the Hmong army that fought on our side so valiantly. So I don't believe that it's too much to ask that the United States, after everything that they did for us, the airmen that they saved that were scared and when they got shot down in North Vietnam and Laos, that these people didn't just risk their lives but lost their lives trying to save down airmen and provided intelligence with us. And for every soldier of the Hmong who died was an American soldier who didn't die. And so I don't think it's a lot to ask to have one day that's special just for them. And I say this because they're not a big population segment. I mean, there's really nothing politically to be gained or lost by supporting this resolution. I just think it's the right thing to do, and I think it's long overdue.
Follow up, Representative Sadler.
With respect, I might argue with you and just say there might be some benefit. How would I say this nicely? A formal government acknowledgement of people's efforts and sacrifice does have some impact. I think the question, the concept of face in Asia is important, and to make sure that people are respected and treated well to their face. I think it might actually help send a message back up through the chain that America's memory is long and that we do honor those who were our allies and our friends, whether it was acknowledged at the time or not, and that the decades may have passed, but the service was still rendered and the obligation still exists. So I would postulate that maybe it would help. But
through the chair, Representative Sadler, I hope you're right.
And I believe this may be on that point, so Representative Reinbold, if that's what he represents, use.
And thank you. Basically, I do think formal recognition is good, and of course we want to appreciate the sacrifices that they made, but to me, isolating one group, to my knowledge, we don't have, even for World War II, the natives, you know, and the contributions that the natives did for World War II was humongous. And to my knowledge, we don't have a special Native Alaskan Recognition Day for what they did, you know, for us. So I'm just, my concern is just that we just got to be careful because there's a lot of people who have made humongous sacrifices, and we don't even know how many there are here, and we know there's a lot of natives here. You know, so to me, it's very concerning that we're picking one group instead of, you know, looking at this globally and trying to recognize for a long period of time.
And I believe we just have a clarification, Representative Ledoux, on the name.
The name of the general was Vang Pao. When he died a couple of years ago, his family really wanted him to be buried in Arlington National Cemetery. And I know Senator Murkowski intervened with the Department of Defense and attempted to see that happen with no success. And he was not permitted to be buried at Arlington, even though he was the commanding officer of these people who had fought so bravely for us during the Vietnam War.
Thank you, Representative Liddy. Representative Hughes?
Yes, I want to thank the sponsor for bringing this forward, and Dirk, you did a good job. And my understanding is there's no fiscal note. That's correct, right? And with all respect for my colleague, Representative Reinbold, I know we don't want to dilute anything here, and I appreciate those concerns, but I see it more as a multiplier rather than diluting in that a day of recognition. I tell you, reading this and the benefit for all Alaskans to better understand, I was not aware until I read the materials of the sacrifice and the fact that the loss of life was 10 times that of other American soldiers. That's incredible. And doing a little math along with the 10 times there, and the injuries were high as well, looking at the number of among us, my math tells me we have about 2% of the U.S. population in our state, and in that we have an overall very small population, our ratio is actually higher than in other states. I'm guessing it would just by math it would be that way, and because of that, I think it's important that Alaska step up to the plate. And so I will be supporting this resolution. So I just want to let you know that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Hughes.
Are there further questions of the committee, Representative Higgins?
Yeah. Through the chair. You know, first, I know some history on this. You know, I've had my uncles were in special forces in Vietnam, and I remember hearing the stories of the Hmong and how well they helped them during that time period. And this is a special group of men that sacrificed their families and their lives for us. And I think they need to have the distinction by themselves to do that, to honor them for what they've done. I remember the stories, you know, that my uncle told me. But I have a lot of respect for them. And I'm a veteran myself, so I would urge that we pass this as a, you know, on their own to do it because of what I know about them. So, with that said, is there any other states that have Hmong Day, do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Higgins, California is the only state. I believe there are multiple municipalities within the country, but California is the only state that has this bill or this resolution. And this is, and that was the state that this resolution was based off of, the California Hmong Day.
Same day. Good. Excellent. All right. Well, I'm in favor of it, obviously.
And Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to say hello to Passard and all my other friends who are there. We all really appreciate your being there, and hopefully, if we can keep the testimony brief, we can move rapidly through this. Let it, for the record, until the redistricting, I represented Mountain View, and there's a high population of Hmongs in Mountain View. And I think in my new district there are some, but not so many. They tend to be, the families tend to congregate in certain parts of our town, and it's a very well-organized, tight, highly motivated educationally community, and they're doing things like developing gardens and things, becoming self-sufficient and business, and they've really provided much more to the community than they've taken from it. And, you know, I was proud to co-sponsor the bill, proud that Representative Ledoux introduced it, and I'd like to see it move.
Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. And before we move on to public testimony, are there any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, do we have a list of folks that are interested in testifying? I'm just trying to gauge if we, oh, here we go, okay. Looks like we do have four people. First of all, do we have anybody in the room? Seeing
yeah,
none.
We have
okay, we'll officially open public testimony, and with that, the first person on here who would like to testify is Pesert Lee. Are you there, Pesert?
Yes, Mr.
Lee?
No,
he just testified.
Okay, and do you have anything to add to what you had mentioned earlier?
Now, one thing I need you guys to support for the H.R. 3192, because the 3192, that they have to break out for the amendment title of 38 of United States. Because the 38 of United States downward have to belong to the World War I, World War II. But now, we have H.R. 3192, over here because I don't want to break out from them, but I need all the senators and congressmen and House of Representatives and all together to support H.R. 3192 all together on a solution on of the Senator Lisa Murkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Lee, and I have here that Mr. Lee is representing himself. And then next we have three more folks here. There's a Chong N. Vang, V-A-N-G, representing himself. Mr. Vang, are you there?
Yeah.
Do you have any public testimony, Mr. Vang?
Yeah, he say he don't have anything about that, but he has to represent for the Hmong people like in Vang in Anchorage, Alaska.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Arthur Yang, Y-A-N-G, are you there? And it shows that you're representing the Hmong also?
Yes, sir. I'm here at the room, and I'm here to support the Bill Number 4 resolution to pass to be recognized as the Hmong Memorial Day.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yang. And then Stephen Yang, are you also out there?
Yes. I'm Stephen Yang, so I'm a support the bill resolution for number 4 and to pass the day for the Hmong Memory Day for the for May 15th.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Yang. And is there any further public testimony? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. And are there any final questions of the committee? Seeing none, let's see here. I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move HDR out of committee with individual recommendations.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hughes. Are there any objections? Okay, seeing no objections, HDR 4 has passed with individual recommendations. So. With that, we appreciate that, and if we could just take a moment to sign the document. We'll just at ease for a moment. Okay, and the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee will come back to order, and we'll be taking up HB 59, Missing Vulnerable Adult Response Plan. Here to speak about that, we have Representative Gruenberg, as well as his staff, Miles. And so maybe if you could just introduce yourself for the record. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Gruenberg has just reminded me. I do want to point out that we did have a Mr. Chang who is hoping.
Dr. Chang?
A Dr. Chang who wanted to testify on the previous concurrent resolution 4. But what we're asking is maybe if he could put his testimony in writing and then we can enter that into the record, into the official record. So thank you, Mr. Representative Gruenberg. So with that, Miles, if you could. Well, first of all, let's. I understand that. Yeah, you do have a CS.
Yes.
Yes.
And so I'd entertain a motion that we can discuss the document.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg?
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Did you want to say something?
I think he's going to.
Oh.
First, I'm Max Grunberg, pleased to be a member of this committee, represent House District 14 in Boniface area in Anchorage. The first thing I'd like to do is a bit of housekeeping. We had previously, I believe, and Susan can correct me if I'm wrong, had adopted the N version last time. She's nodding, yeah. And we have an O version that I'd like to offer. And if somebody would interpose an objection, then I can discuss the differences.
If you could.
Thank you. Representative Reinbold.
So Representative Grunberg is officially
they're just
the O version, correct?
Excuse me. Through the chair, Representative Foster, does somebody need to make a motion to consider the draft before we make an objection to it?
Correct. I've offered it, and that's basically the same thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so we're hopefully, I'm going to describe the differences. The objection can be withdrawn, then we can deal with the old version. That's okay. Okay. If the members would look at page 2. Do you have this? Okay. Yes. You don't have the old version. Do we have an extra copy of the old version?
Okay. Does everybody have a copy of the old version? Negative. We could just take a quick hit easier. Back in order here, and just to recap, Representative Grunberg has moved the O version. Representative Reinberg Bold has objected for the purposes of discussion, and Representative Grunberg is explaining the changes between the last version and the O version.
Yes, sir. Thank you. If the members would look on page 2, we have a stylistic change. If the members would look in the N version, lines 6 through 9, you will see that was a lengthy paragraph. And what we've done is just broken out sub 1 and 2 to develop and implement. We've put under sub 1, line 6 is now in line 7, and number 2, coordinate the use of those plans, is now in line 10. That's no substantive change. The next thing that we did originally in the N version, we had line 16 determining where to implement the plan, and we had said on line 10 determining when it's appropriate. And what we did was we simply combined the concept of where to implement the plan to the concept of when it's appropriate to implement the plan. And so now on line 12 it says determining when and where to implement the plan. That's simply stylistic as well. We eliminated the word that on the first word on line 25. That was unnecessary. And the Lieutenant Dial and the public safety folks had some problem with the definition, because the feeling was that they didn't want everybody who's inebriated to access the Silver Alert program. So what we did was we struck line 26, the definition, the reference, the AS 4724-900, and we did a more narrow definition. When this bill started making its way through the legislature in the 27th legislature, that statute read the way our current O version reads. And then we passed House Bill 150, which was the Vulnerable Adult for Fraud. Remember that? It was the governor's bill. And we changed and broadened that definition because we dealt with elder fraud and stuff. And we're not talking about people who may be victims of elder fraud. We're talking about folks who have physical and mental or mental impairment. And so in conjunction with and the concurrence with the Department of Public Safety, and I think they'll be prepared to testify to this, we narrowed the definition back to the way it had been. And so those are the three changes, or the changes. Miles, am I missing anything?
For the record, Miles Brooks, staff representative Gruenberg. That summarizes the changes in, just to one note, just to make sure that we're understanding that the definition for vulnerable adult, the change only applies to this bill, and it's not changed anywhere else in statute. And we just wanted to, I just want to make sure that's on the record to let everybody know that we're not playing with the definition that was changed last year. So thank you.
And with that, I would ask that if anybody still, if the objections are maintained, or if not, we can proceed with the bill.
Okay. And do you maintain your objection?
I can remove it.
Okay. And the objection is removed, Representative Gruenberg.
With that, I would like Mr. Brooks to testify for a moment, then we'll go to the witnesses, and hopefully we'll be able to answer some of the questions you folks have had.
Sure. Miles, if you could proceed.
Again, Miles Brooks here, Staff Representative Gruenberg. We presented the bill in depth last time, and I can go through that again for the members that were here. If not, we can just move on. There's a few things that I'd like to share with the committee here. If you look in, there was a handout distributed today that just notes some of the senior population in Alaska and some similar silver alert statistics from states that have enacted silver alert across the country. There's no national statistic database per se, but specific states that are mentioned here have listed some of their silver alert success rates. And again, it's in the handout with our letterhead on it. Just a quick synopsis of it. Silver alert's kind of a growing trend. About 2006, 2007 is when a lot of this legislation in other states is started to come forward, and some of the numbers that return on some of the silver alert success rates, what I've been able to find is anywhere between about 95% and 100% success rate for seniors being safely returned in states that have a silver alert system. And the sources for those reports are also noted within that handout. Just to put on the record, currently, for 2015, estimates of the populations for Alaskans 60 and older is approximately 100,000. Within a 12-year period, or excuse me, 9-year period, between 2015 and 2024, that population is expected to grow from 100,000 to 155,000. Also, within the same time period, the 2015 estimated population for Alaskans with Alzheimer's disease or related dementia is approximately 7,000. However, in the 10-year period between 2015 and 2025, that number is expected to jump to about 11,000 Alaskans. And as older people are living longer through advancements in medical science, they're living longer, and the risk for Alzheimer's and related dementia diseases also increases because of usually it hits the older adults as they get older. I think that is it. If there's any questions for me on what I've prepared or some of the changes that were drafted, I'd be happy to answer.
And Representative Gruenberg, do you have a comment?
No, just one. Thank you, Miles. Just one thing I'd point out to the members, the March 11 memo from Kathleen Strasbar of Ledge Legal, that we don't have to have a specific section in the bill authorizing the promulgation of regs, and I just want that entered in the record, and that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. Are there any questions of the committee before we go into public testimony? Representative Reinbold?
I have one now and several for the public people are online, the responders. But first, did you say how many people or is likely that will be impacted because of this legislation?
Miles Brooks, through the chair, Representative Reinbold. It's hard to nail down a specific number on how many are to be affected, but there are statistics provided by the Alaska Commission on Aging that about 60% of people who suffer from Alzheimer's will wander away at some point. And within that 60%, I guess we could do some math here with, you know, the 7,000, that estimated population. Are all 60% of that 7,000 going to meet the definition of the silver alert? I'm not sure. And I could try to find that answer for you, but I think I could just leave it at that. And if you have further questions, I could try to figure those out for you.
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold.
Okay, so if you're just referring to the Alzheimer's, let's say the 7,000, 60%, let's say it's roughly 4,000, that's just one segment. There's other vulnerable people out there. So, I mean, to me, it's kind of important to have, you know, some sort of a number that this is going to, you know, impact, because it could be very costly, you know, eventually if we're doing more through this alert system and helping a lot more people. So just having some sort of figure would be very, very helpful.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I can continue to search those and hunt those numbers down to come up with a better understanding of how many adults over the age of 18 with mental or physical disabilities that would match this definition currently before us in the legislation. And I can try to get those numbers to you to answer that question.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Representative Sadler?
Brief question. On page 2 of version O, line 4 says DPS shall cooperate with DMV, shall using statewide local media, and then on page 7 says develop and implement missing da 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 da. Is the implication, is the expectation here that DPS and DMV will work with existing media to develop the program?
I'll answer that.
Representative Grunberg?
Yes.
Abstaining.
Okay. Okay, further questions before we go to, Representative Shelley Hughes.
Thank you, Chair. And maybe this was touched upon last time when we discussed the bill, but if so, I do apologize. Currently, or if this bill were not to pass, would the Department of Public Safety and Military and Veterans Affairs, would they issue, or have they ever issued an alert for someone who is not a child, for someone that would be in this at-risk population? Has it ever occurred, or could it occur without this bill passing?
Representative Grunberg, if you'd like to answer that.
We're going to have, we have on the line representatives of both departments. I hate to testify when they can testify directly, so I would like it if we could refer that to them.
Okay, and I think with that, maybe we'll go ahead and open public testimony. We have two people online who are available for questions, it looks like, and then two folks who are here for public testimony. The first one, Patrick Cunningham, if you could state your name and affiliation for the record, if you're online.
Yes, I'm online. Chairs Foster, Liddell, and members of the committee. My name is Patrick Cunningham, and I'm a member of the Board of Directors of Alzheimer's Resource Agency that provides services throughout the state to persons who have Alzheimer's disease and related dementias and their families. I'm also a professor of social work in the College of Health at the University of Alaska Anchorage. It is estimated that close to 7,000 Alaskans have this disease. An unfortunate manifestation of this disease is that healthcare statistics show that 6 out of 10 dementia victims will tend to wander at least once from their place of residence, be unable to make their way home or to a safe place. According to the National Alzheimer's Association, if not located within a 24-hour period, the person may suffer serious injury or death. In the summer of last year, an elder woman in Anchorage became missing and was later found dead just off the coastal trail. In addition to the seniors, there are adults with physical and intellectual disabilities, persons with mental illness who may be distraught and suicidal, and soldiers and veterans who suffer from traumatic brain injuries or post-traumatic stress disorder who may become disoriented and in need of assistance. This may be on foot, or it could be in a motor vehicle. Many of the beneficiaries of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority fall into these categories. This legislation will create a safety plan for vulnerable adults who are missing and at risk. It is very timely given the rise in the number of vulnerable adults in Alaska. It will also promote more awareness among public safety officials and the public to be more alert toward vulnerable adults. The School of Social Work at the University of Alaska Anchorage graduates professional social workers who provide a variety of services to vulnerable populations throughout Alaska, and this alert program will be of great benefit to them should one of their clients become at risk. I strongly support this legislation. I'm hopeful that it will become law this legislative session. Thank you for allowing me the time to present this testimony and for your service to Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Does anybody in the committee have a question? Seeing none, the next person on our list here is Brad Johnson. Brad, if you're there, if you could state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. My name is Brad Johnson. I'm Deputy Chief of the Fairbanks Police Department up here in the interior and also Vice President of the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, which is generally known as ACOP by that acronym. In representing ACOP, I want you to know that we are in support of this legislation. My agency also is in support of the legislation, and I wanted to add also that we support a more narrow definition such as the one that's been introduced in version O, because if it's a more broad definition, then we certainly run into issues where this might come into play where it's not necessarily warranted. Also, I think it's important to know from a local perspective, from a municipal agency, that we don't believe that this is going to preclude or limit any of the means and methods that we use to locate vulnerable missing adults currently, but simply adds another tool to the toolbox and makes it available to us, much as the Amber Alert becomes available in the case of an abducted child. I believe, and from what we've seen so far, that once the plan is developed, it won't necessarily provide mandates under when it has to be used, but will provide an opportunity for municipalities to use it when it's deemed appropriate. And under those circumstances, we certainly support it and would think it would add a significant tool to our toolbox for that use. Also, I'm on the line for any questions. I understand there may be some questions as to how this might affect local efforts, and since I represent a local agency, I'll be happy to address those questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And to that note, in regard to questions, we do have Lieutenant Dial with the Alaska State Troopers in Ketchikan, and also Steve Smith with the Deputy Chief Anchorage Police Department in Anchorage, available for questions. So if there are questions of the committee, and we have three here, we'll go with Representative Higgins, then Hughes, and then Reinbold.
Yep, thank you, through the chair. Today, if I wanted to call and say that my dad was missing for whatever reasons, how would you find him?
And this is Brad Johnson. Is that addressed to me or addressed to anybody?
It's addressed to you because you're in Fairbanks.
Okay, thank
That's
you.
That's where I live.
We have a variety of things at our disposal. The first thing that we would do is gather as much information as we can from the family and other folks that might have any idea where the person might go. We would deploy our resources throughout the area and saturate it as much as possible, going door to door or other places that he might go. We would put out alert notifications through Nixl, which is a government entity social media. That also contacts local media in the Fairbanks area. We would likely put out a cab alert notifying cab drivers throughout the community of the name and description of this of the individual that we're looking for. We would use other forms of social media as available, and then through the Fairbanks North Star Borough, we would use a reverse dial notification system that we can establish a geographical area. And automated messages go out to all telephone numbers within that area, notifying the residents of who we're looking for and why and who to contact should they see somebody.
Follow-up,
Representative Higgins.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. Now, if I'm king for the day and I just pass this bill, how would it change things or how would it make things better?
The additional tool that it provides us is, and the AST representative can confirm this or correct anything that I might misspeak, but through the alert system as it's used for the Amber Alert, and this would be similar as I understand it, it allows us to request initiation of an alert using this Silver Alert plan. So we would check and verify that the case meets the criteria for an alert, We would notify the Alaska State Troopers, who would be the controlling agency, to request the alert through DMBA, who manages the emergency alert system. And once it met approval, then that emergency alert would go out through the EAS, which consists of a message through all broadcast radio and television media, along with the GCI cable television network.
All right. So basically then, a follow-up, I'm sorry. Sure. So basically what we're saying here is that this will allow you to be able to use the local media's radio, television, and it's got down here newspaper publishers, but communications then. Is that what you're saying? Because right now you can't do that.
And not through a single source notification, that's correct. And we certainly can't do it over television, over the EAS, the emergency alert system. And this would, of course, also extend that potentially statewide if we had reason to think that they had left the area.
Thank you.
And Representative Hughes?
And thank you, Chair. I have a follow-up to that and then my own question. So right now you can contact your local media. You just can't use the emergency alert system, but you could let all the media outlets know and then leave it up to their discretion as how that they could get the word out. Is that correct? And does that happen?
That would be, as I understand it, yes.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. And my question is the use of the word vulnerable adult, and it's been redefined here for this particular piece of legislation. And I'm wondering if you as a law enforcement officer, and actually any of the other ones who are online representing public safety in different places around the state, will it be confusing? Do you have other things where you're using that the other definition of vulnerable population when you're applying other things that you do? I'm just wondering if that's going to be a sticking point or if you have no problem with that. I was thinking that we might have wanted to use just something like at-risk adult rather than vulnerable adult just because of that confusion. But maybe it doesn't matter because or does it? And Mr. Johnson, if you could answer that, and then if Chair, if any of the others online have anything to say, I'd appreciate if they could comment on that as well.
Sure. Mr. Johnson?
Yes, thank you. Just very briefly, it doesn't give me particular pause, but again, AST through the Department of Public Safety are going to be the ones that would actually establish requesting criteria through a formal Silver Alert plan. And so they probably would have more input on that than I do, since they would be developing it.
And does anybody else have any comments on that online? Hearing none, I believe the next question was Representative Reinbold.
Yes, and thank you. I would like to address this to Steve Smith. Are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay, nice to hear from you, Steve. Okay, I have several questions. First of all, I think in concept this is a great idea. However, what my concerns are that this could have pretty broad outreach and local impacts to the officers or the first responders. And so I'm wondering, like they cared about in Fairbanks, what system we already have in place for vulnerable adults. And what will this Amber Alert do? Because basically, to me, it seems like if let's say someone wandered close to their house, let's say the Alzheimer's person, it doesn't seem like a statewide alert necessarily would be the right approach. I understand that it's something that allows you to use this, but I'm just trying to make sure that you guys have enough resources, I guess, to handle if this is going to be a tremendous increase in people that you're having to deal with on the front line. I'm not sure. Maybe you guys already have this under control, but that's basically what I'm asking you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative, and through the chair. Just a quick preface. I am newer to this particular bill and issue. I have not heard the prior testimony nor testified on earlier versions of it. So that said, I appreciate the question. We have a fairly robust policy, procedure, and system for approaching missing and runaway or abducted persons. That's the title of our policy procedure on that. no matter what their status, meaning whether they're juveniles or adults or abducted or just missing. So we have a pretty good apparatus and response plan in place. The Amber Alert system, so the use of the emergency alert system for Amber Alerts, is just one very small and very narrowly defined part of that system, because it currently applies to a very small population and situation, abducted juveniles, and really there are some other caveats as well. So it's rarely used, and, you know, a big deal. You don't want to go to that well too often, because then the citizens start to ignore it. So what we have in our broader policy is an array of resources, very similar to what Chief Johnson in Fairbanks was speaking to. So our primary response mechanism, like most other police departments, would be patrol officers. A patrol supervisor would go and help assess the situation. And then, depending on what they find out, the circumstances of the call, then it may escalate. And so what our policy allows for is the the right sizing, if you will, of a particular response. So we do try to very judiciously approach that, so that you're not sending a statewide alert, exactly what you're saying about employing all kinds of resources for something that's too much or might be ignored. So we start it small. We contact the complainants or the victims, start looking in the most predictable areas, and you mentioned around the house. Exactly. Searching the house thoroughly usually does discover the person, especially in the case of juveniles who like to hide and play and such, but also even with vulnerable adults who might wander off, usually not too far, usually. Then if we find that something's peculiar, something suspicious, we're not getting there, then we escalate our response. We're also fortunate to have what we call our auxiliary search team, which are citizen volunteers. They're not sworn officers. Citizens volunteers, they're trained. They have equipment, vests and radios and a response vehicle and such. They are well trained in both searching techniques as well as incident command. And we initiate an incident command structure, which by its definition can be scaled, expanded, and contracted as necessary. And that's our approach. And it has served us fairly well.
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold.
Thank you. That was a great, great answer. Okay, so basically I see that, I don't know if you're part of the Alaska Association Chief of Police or not, but I see that there's no letter from the Anchorage Police Department, you know, one way or another. Do you think this is a necessary law? And if we don't pass this, are we leaving people at risk?
Yeah, and I thank you to the chair. Again, I was first made aware of this bill yesterday, and so I guess I'm employed here to answer questions. I'm not bringing the position of the police department per se. That wasn't my tasking as much. Just kind of being available to describe what we do. But understanding the history and reading through the O version, that's the only version I've actually got in front of me, so I'm not sure of the earlier versions, I do, you know, appreciate the altering of that definition of vulnerable adult. Because we do have a lot of people, often they're chronic public inebriates and the like, who we would be responding and using a lot of resources commonly for. We already do, frankly. You know, we come across them and then, you know, bring them to shelters and things of that nature. But then in looking for them on top of it, if somebody, you know, last saw them a week ago, that sort of thing. So I think we provide a good service in terms of finding vulnerable and missing persons of all ages. I don't think this bill obligates us to more. It is, it would provide another tool, as Chief Johnson said. I don't think we would use it much, because we try to be very judicious in the use of that emergency alert system, or it nullifies its effectiveness, which is a concern. Plus, I think rare is the time when a vulnerable adult in Anchorage would be relevant and likely to be found in Fairbanks or Juneau or things of that nature. So I don't think, in just my brief study of this bill, that it hurts. It does provide another tool that we would likely not use much, but I don't suppose that hurts. And, you know, it would just be another, you know, part of our fairly comprehensive approach now.
And a follow-up?
Thank you, Stephen. This will be my final question. But basically, to me, the vulnerable, I mean, to me, that still is a hard one to wrap my head around. It could be mental health issues. Like you said, suicidal. It could be Alzheimer's people. It could be a drunken teenager, you know, that's over 18. It could just be so many things. And what my concern is with the zero fiscal note, I just making sure that, if we're able to do this, that you guys have the resources. If you are going to be responding, maybe you already are responding to these people, so there truly is no increased fiscal note. But we just want to make sure you have the resources you need if this is going to broaden your scope at all.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. I appreciate that concern. Trust me, I truly do. And I don't think this will increase the numbers of times we're called on this. We're already going to these sorts of things if we get called about somebody who is missing, again, of any nature and age. And that's where we are relying on the investigatory, powers, abilities of our officers, and then you almost always a sergeant, a street supervisor is going to get involved early on. And that's up to them to sense the totality of the circumstances and use their judgment to see just what they have. And that's why we start small, unless, something clearly is just an emergency and heinous right from the beginning. Some, abduction that gets called in is, a very traumatic event. It's usually not that. And so we go and start checking out so we don't overreact, but we appropriately react. And one other thing I forgot to mention, you were talking about it before in a prior question to Chief Johnson, about activation of the press. And we use many of those same tools, but what we have found is that when we have some type of missing person or even runaway occasionally, we don't usually use them for runaways, but an endangered runaway we would, we'll put out a press release, and we have found that our local press here in Anchorage is pretty receptive to carrying those. So we have a good relationship with them here, although it's not mandatory for them to do so, and it doesn't, like the emergency alert system would break into programming and such. Of course, this would not do that. But when we put out a press release and enlist the public's help and enlist the press's help in putting out information, we've had great success, and it's been very helpful. So we are thankful for that, as well as the use of, we're trying to make greater use of social media and other techniques and means of communication that Chief Johnson very appropriately alluded to.
Thank you.
Okay, and this is just a final comment through the chair. So you do support it, and you agree that there's no fiscal note. I mean, is that kind of – is I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Thank you. Through the chair, I think that's fair characterization. In my judgment, this is fine. I don't think it is, immediately necessary or that it will make us tremendously more effective. I think it's just another tool. I don't think it's critical, but it's okay. And I don't think it will cost the municipality of Anchorage, cost the Anchorage Police Department and the municipality more by way of more responses or things of that nature.
Thank you
very much. And Representative Sadler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a brief question. I'm not experienced in this area, but my question is, are there ever any circumstances under which the subject of a search, whether it's a child or an adult, is at all obligated to bear the cost of that search? Not just under this program, but any circumstance.
Is that for Steve Smith?
I think it would be for police, yeah.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm not aware of that, Representative Sadler, that we don't bill for these sorts of things. I don't know what other cost recovery mechanism. And I suppose there's times we wish we could, because there's been a few things that we went to where, circumstances, there was some irresponsible behavior and goofing around, things of that nature. And I'm not talking about false report of, false report of a crime, which is a crime in of itself. But, there's times when we've invested a fair amount of resources and it turned out to be pretty much nothing. We don't charge for that because then you don't want to have a chilling effect on people calling, right? Because then someone's going to call when there is something going on, and we won't get the call because they're afraid of getting billed, and you have a tragedy. So we don't bill for that, and I'm not sure of a cost recovery mechanism. Perhaps some of my colleagues do.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Representative Hughes?
Thank you, and I have two questions for Lieutenant Dial, if you could address these. We've heard reference to this as another tool, and I think of tools as being something helpful, making tools to make our jobs easier, lighten our workload. So I would like to know if you agree with that, that this bill would provide a tool for you that would be indeed helpful, and that you're confident it would result in very few alerts throughout the year, and therefore have no cost impact? If you could speak to that. That's my first question.
For the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with the State Troopers out of Ketchikan, Alaska. I first want to say that the department does support the intent of House Bill 59 and the changes made in the O version. We do believe those changes will give the department greater flexibility in developing a plan that accomplishes the goals of the legislation. As far as a tool in the toolbox, perhaps more so for some of the municipalities, I can say that the department maintains emergency and media contact lists at all trooper posts in the state that can be utilized in all missing person cases. We do commonly work with the media on cases involving wanted or dangerous individuals. So it is our common practice when we believe a media notification will assist in our mission that we're going to utilize those already. So it perhaps will be more of a tool for some of the local municipalities that do not have a plan of that nature.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, and Chair. The second question is back to my question earlier about the definition of vulnerable adult, which was in used in a previous session in a bill, and that's why it's used again. But I am concerned because that is used throughout statute pertaining to other things, and I'm wondering if any of the work that you do for in other areas of law enforcement use that term, and if there will be any problem with there being the same term but different definitions for different work that you do.
Through the chair, the change in the O version is specific to this legislation, so we do not believe that's going to affect the department and our activities currently.
Follow up. Thank you. Through the chair. So right now, are you any of your law enforcement work, the actions that you take, do you use the other definition that's not in this bill?
Through the chair, that definition, as I understand it, primarily will affect how we interact with the Department of Law and how we charge certain offenses. The way we do our investigations is not altered by that.
Okay, thank you. And then I have another follow-up. Part of the reason why we wanted to narrow it, and it was at the recommendation at our last hearing, that there was concern that in a domestic violence situation, one spouse could call and try to get something on the emergency alert system for an abused spouse that had left the home. So are you confident that the way it is written now, we'd be able to filter out those kind of cases from getting overloading the system?
Through the chair, we do. We envision that the creation of a plan in conjunction with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs would allow us to develop something that would be a localized contact list and policy that we could use to disseminate the information to the media outlets. We believe that we can work into that plan enough flexibility to help us address those situations in which somebody will try to use law enforcement to find somebody that's not really missing but has just left.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And just to point out real quick, we do have Mike O'Hare, who's on the line. He's with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and I'll give him the opportunity if he has anything to say. I think he's just here for questions if anybody on the committee does have questions, and I know that Representative Higgins does have a question here.
Yeah, through the chair, getting back to the zero fiscal note, one of the concerns I've got, doing some reading, and you can either trust what you read on the internet or you don't. It's one of those things. But as you do research, at least this particular article I was looking at says, using the Silver Alert is an expensive program and is growing in the states. But thanks to a congressional bill of $100,000 that was given to trying to help the program get implemented in the states through digital signage on the highways, because that's, going through school in Florida, that's how they did their Silver Alert and Amber Alert. Now, I know that we don't have those signages in Fairbanks. I know, I think I've seen a couple in Anchorage that have that. So my question is, you know, because I keep hearing there's no fiscal note to this particular bill, but if Washington decides to implement the Silver Alert through all the states, I wonder if we would be on the hook to put those signages up to properly implement this system, because that's how it's basically done in other states, is through that signage. So I guess my question to all the law enforcement officers, do you see that possibly coming down the road?
Mr. Chairman, this is, for the record, Mike O'Hare, Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. I'd like to give that up to Lieutenant Dial to answer for public safety.
Okay, go ahead.
Once again, for the record, this is Lieutenant Dial. If I understand the question correctly, if the department right now does not see this legislation creating a notification similar to an Amber Alert, if that were the case, to expand the Amber Alert system to incorporate these new alerts would likely result in a fiscal note to the department. Does that answer the question?
It does. That's what I thought.
Okay. Are there any further questions of the committee from any of the folks online?
Mr. Chairman, Michael Hare.
Go ahead, Michael Hare.
Thanks a lot, members of the committee. Appreciate the time. For the record, Michael Hare, Deputy Director, Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Just wanted to sort of echo what Lieutenant Dial says. This bill requires Department of Military and Veterans Affairs and Department of Public Safety to cooperate and collaborate with some planning mechanism that can provide a communication capability to the local community should a person under the definitions go missing. Some local communities already have this plan in place. As Lieutenant Dial eloquently said, this will certainly help those communities that don't necessarily have a plan in place and can hopefully help them implement such a plan. We coordinate and collaborate with the Department of Public Safety all the time for many, many different missions. Like I say, we certainly support the intent of the bill, and we will cooperate and collaborate with Department of Public Safety. For the record, I promise, sir.
Thank you, Mr. O'Hare. And we'll go ahead and close public testimony unless anybody has any questions, or are there any folks in the room here who would like to testify?
We have several.
Oh, okay, great. If you could please approach the front here and just state your name for the record. Oh, sorry?
You have a list.
We have a list.
Mr. Chair, we have Marie Darlin and Ken Helander. Is there anybody else here from... Maybe they could come up there representing the elder folks.
Sure. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, if you could... did you want to enter your testimony verbally or in writing? Verbally?
I think they'll be very brief.
Oh, right there.
Here, this is up to date.
Oh, I see. Okay, great. If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. My name is Ken Helander. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP Alaska. And prior to working for AARP, by the way, I've worked for the Alzheimer's Association. I have experience both professionally when I was the director of an adult day program and working in a long-term care facility of dealing with people who have wandered away from the premises and had where we had to implement a search procedure. I also had the experience of being a son of a father who went wandering and was lost. And I guess to address just a few of the questions that I heard asked, you know, from the standpoint of somebody who has been a caregiver, the incidence of times when we would have to implement something as formal as a response system like this would be very rare, because most of the people who are vulnerable adults under this definition would be people who are in the care of someone, whether a family member or at an adult day program or at an assisted living or a nursing home. So there would be people. Those people are very vigilant about the whereabouts, but it is occasional that someone does manage to get away. When we hear about 60% of people with Alzheimer's are going to wander, it is because people are, that is a typical symptom of Alzheimer's disease, but it doesn't mean that 60% of the people are going to go and get lost and need to, you know, activate a response system. But when it happens, this, to me, in my experience of having had to deal with somebody who was missing overnight, would have provided a measure of reassurance, not only that the person was going to be found, but the anxiety that is existent for the people who are responsible, whether it's family members or paid caregivers, is enormous. And so to be able to summon a response system quickly and effectively, as this one describes, I think would be a very, very positive step and another tool.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you very much, Ken. And we have here Marie Darlin. You could also state your name and affiliation just for the record. Thank you.
My name is Marie Darlin, and today I am representing the Alaska Commission on Aging. Usually I'm here for AARP. Today, Denise is in a meeting out of the state, so she asked that as a member of the Commission on Aging, I present their support for this group. And so that's what we're doing. You already have had letters from the commission also. And all we want to do is say that this is something we think is very important, and couldn't have said it any better than what Ken has already said it, that this is something that really would be helpful to anybody who is in this kind of a situation. And the Alaska Commission on Aging has really, during this last year, held a lot of meetings in different places as we go around the state with our meetings, asking people who are caregivers of or work with Alzheimer's patients to tell us what some of their concerns really are. And this is one that's right at the top of the list every time. That is our concern, that if our people wander, and we know there's been instances up north where that's had very severe, you know, results, that that's one thing they are concerned about, and anything like this would really be helpful then for whether it's, you know, an assisted living home, whether it's just a personal caregiver or whoever it might be that realizes somebody's lost, not here, that then there's somewhere they can go that will then help them start the search. And so that's why we really think it's important that there be a way to do that.
Are there any questions for Ms. Darlin? Seeing none, we appreciate your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I know Kelly Howell is here. Did you have anything or no? No? Okay. Okay.
I'm going to ask a question.
Sure. Representative Reinbold?
Okay. Thank you. Is Mike O'Hare or Lieutenant Dial still online?
Through the chair, this is Lieutenant Dial. I am online.
Yes, ma'am, through the chair, yeah, both of us.
Okay, this question is for either one of you. Will the EAS system be used to implement or issue the alerts?
Through the chair, Mike O'Hare, representative, that is to be determined on the urgency of the issue. The state emergency alert system is a statewide network. A lot of these notifications are at a localized level. So we are going to work the initial planning. Lieutenant Dial can correct me. We will work the initial planning methodology at the local level. So not necessarily, and probably not, will it include the emergency alert system.
This is Lieutenant Dial. I would agree with that and just say that in some cases, a more localized notification plan might be appropriate, and in some cases we might utilize the EAS system. So that would be part of our discussion and formulation of the plan.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We have another question from Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's kind of the same question for both the gentlemen. I guess, Michael, first, did DMV and DPS help design the Amber Alert system, or was that adopted from a national plan? And if it was adopted from a national plan, were there any special accommodations for Alaska? I'm just trying to get some precedent for how the Silver Alert plan might be. So first, Michael, and then DPS, how was the Amber Alert system designed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Sandler, Michael O'Hare for the record. The Amber Alert system was designed from a national model, which, if you'll notice, is not in statute as well as the Silver Alert would not be, or is, excuse me. So how it's developed, it is a statewide relay system in cooperation with the state broadcasters and DOT, and both cable TV, radio, multimedia, to send out a statewide alert for tsunami warnings, as well as for the Amber Alert system, which in our viewpoint is the ultimate distress signal to go out for a missing child. So we try and use it on very, very rare occasions, so a society does not get jaded to a lot of alerts going out, that they are aware of them only as necessary, as absolutely necessary. And so due to our limited infrastructure, the relay goes out on several methods. Like I said, cable TV, radio, satellite broadcasts through the Broadcasters Association around the state. I hope that answers your question.
That does. And the same question for the gentleman from Public Safety, Phil.
Once again, for the record, this is Lieutenant Dial. I really would not have anything to add to what Mr. O'Hare said, except for the fact that we do process these notifications through our Fairbanks Dispatch Center.
Okay, thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. Representative Higgins.
This is a question for our Representative Grunberg. In the life before this, you were an attorney, right? A lawyer?
Yes, I practiced family law.
Good. Maybe you can help me. Maybe I'll check this out.
You don't need my services.
No, not yet. Not yet.
He's a divorce lawyer.
On page 2, section C, you know, on that paragraph right there, it basically says that the operators of the communications is not civilly liable for participating in a missing vulnerable adult prompt response and notification plan, or for participating in an actual implementation of a plan if the broadcaster, publisher, or owner or operator has verified the authenticity of the plan's implementation with the law enforcement agency. So the word if, what happens if they don't?
Then the immunity would not apply.
Okay. Now, is that something that may be a problem for these people?
I'm going to answer from what I know. Okay. You may want to ask the folks online. I would think not, because the plan will be implemented. It'll be disseminated. The people will know it's an official plan. And what this says is if the broadcasters follow the plan, then they're immunized. If they go off on their own and decide to state some facts that are false or something like that, then the immunity doesn't apply. That would be my reading as an attorney, but you may want to get information from somebody else.
Representative Ledoux?
Through the chair, Ken, this question again to Representative Grunberg. How would you verify the authenticity of the plan's implementation with a law enforcement agency? What would be involved in verifying the authenticity of the plan?
Well, there would be presumably some kind of an email or something like that sent out, and if it was on official or, you know, a fax, if it came from the official email address, I think that would be sufficiently verified. They don't have to phone up every time, but as long as on its face it appeared to be valid and it didn't just come from somebody in Kenya asking, by the way, $7,500.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions?
My question to you.
Okay, great.
We have legislation to deal with the Kenyan folks.
That's why I try to get my $6 million.
Okay.
I would just like to say one thing. I'd like to just, if I could, thank everybody who came here, everybody online, and the folks who came up with this idea. I hope it'll pass out, but regardless, it's a good idea, and hopefully we'll save some lives. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Okay, we're going to go ahead and close public testimony now. And one last time, are there any further questions of the committee? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I will move HB 59 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Be over.
And
oh, excuse me. CS for House Bill 59, 28-LS0260/O.
Okay, great. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, the O version of HB 59 has passed out of committee. Thank you very much. I don't see anything further on our agenda here. So with that, that wraps up today's hearing. And if you could just stick around and sign the official document. And with that, we will be adjourned at 2:37 p.m. Thank you, everybody.